the value of the herbs, there's a great deal of competition for them.
Oh, yes. And the Van Reach Mountains are infested with monsters.
Of course they are. Everywhere interesting seems to be. I'll take a look at the books when I get a chance. Thank you.
It is my honor to be of service, Arbiter.
I twisted my lips in response to her words. You don't need to be so formal. I'm not that important. Researcher put a hand over her chest and closed her eyes.
Oh, thank the goddess. It was so hard doing that. It's been ages since I've had to be all, it's my honor to serve you and such.
I laughed. I've never been much for titles and formalities.
That's a relief. Now, what else do you need?
She folded her hands in front of her, rolling back and forth on her heels with obvious energy. I think that's most of it for today, actually. Let me think for a minute. What else did I need to know? A whole lot of things, actually. But what could she help me with immediately? Probably more questions related to my new attunement? Or maybe something about the Whispers, that organization that Tristan supposedly belonged to? Maybe not that last part. Asking her about the Whispers could be suspicious. She's being extremely helpful, but I'm not her summoner, and I still don't know who her summoner is. She wouldn't tell me last time. Meaning that might be a good question. Do I have sufficient authority now for you to tell me who summoned you? She shook her head.
Nope. That's one of the things I've been expressly ordered not to share.
I considered that. If I asked you the name of a summoner, could you tell me if they're not the one you're contracted with?
I suppose I could answer that.
Who seems likely? Is it Alora Theus?
Not her.
I didn't actually know that many other summoners. I listed a few more names of students, but none of them came up. Professor Orden, maybe? She told me she wasn't a summoner, but she deceived me about plenty of other things, and I knew she worked in here.
Nope.
I nodded absently. Okay. Do you have a list of all summoners working at the university?
Not in a single location. You could look at the general faculty list and cross-reference them with the individual profiles for each faculty member, though.
I waved a hand dismissively. Too much work. It's not that important.
If you say so.
I rubbed my chin. I think that's all I have to ask for the moment, but I'm sure I'll be back here soon. Thanks for all the help.
It's been my pleasure, Arbiter.
She bowed at the waist.
I had fun, too. You should come by more often.
It struck me that she sounded lonely. And that made sense, given that she was standing around, sentient and conscious, doing virtually nothing all day. Maybe she was scanning through the books somehow. I didn't really know. I'll try to do that. I meant it, both for her sake and mine. I went and grabbed the books about the Van Reach Mountains she told me about, packed them in my backpack, and headed out. It was time to risk visiting my dorm. I strongly considered going to Jin's room first. It was just above mine. It would have been easy to check on him, just to see if he was there. To see if he was even alive. But what would I say? Oh, hey, Jin, how's that shrapnel in your chest doing? My hands had balled into fists without my conscious knowledge. No, I wasn't ready to look for Jin just yet. I told myself it was because Sarah was my priority right now, but I was aware I was deflecting. I was fine, though. The lie was sweeter than the truth, but the truth was sufficient reason to stay away in itself. We nearly killed each other. The next time I saw him, I knew he might try to finish what he'd started. I doubted it, but that doubt itched at the back of my mind, and I knew it would continue until I found a way to expunge it. That was, like dealing with any fear, a substantial task, and one I wasn't particularly adept at. I made it to my own door without being ambushed by assassins. I admit it was kind of a letdown. I would have felt vindicated if there had been assassins, and maybe it would have distracted me from thinking about Jin. Probably not. In retrospect, assassins reminded me of the first time he'd saved me. Fresh. Okay, clearing mind, focusing on work. I opened my door. I didn't have a perfect memory, and it had been a while since I'd been back to my room, but I was pretty certain it was not how I'd left it. It didn't look like someone had sacked the room, but there were little things that were out of place. The books on my desk were on the left side, not the upper right-hand corner where I usually put them. My clothes were folded too well. Honestly, I was awful at folding. I activated my attunement, scanning the area for magic. I found something faint, glowing subtly under the carpet. I couldn't ignore that. I just have to pay for the damages. I cut away a square of the carpet, finding a set of runes that I most certainly hadn't put there. Let's see. That's very similar to the activation rune on my return bell, but with a higher level of sensitivity. Betting it's for detecting if anyone steps on the area above it. That's the function rune. It has something having to do with air mana, and it's tied to the next rune, which is something that stores a specific sound. That's a targeting rune for setting a destination for a spell effect. The rest of them are just runes for capacity and recharging the enchantments automatically. After a moment of consideration, I determined that they were a simple signaling enchantment, something that activated another set of enchantments elsewhere when it detected someone present in the area. From the level of the range rune, the targeted location could be anywhere in the city, and unfortunately, I didn't have any way of tracing where it was going. Not immediately, at least. I was reasonably confident that Jin didn't have a high-level enchanter available, so it probably wasn't him. I patched up the carpet, took my schoolbooks, and left. I abandoned the clothes. I didn't trust that they didn't have any kind of detection enchantments built into them. They weren't glowing, so it wasn't likely, but I wasn't going to take the risk. Schoolbooks wouldn't have the enchantment capacity to handle any serious enchantments. Trials of Judgment had to be made of some kind of special material to be able to handle the magic it was capable of, and I was reasonably confident these books were the same ones I'd left behind. I checked each book with my attunement before packing it away, though, just to be safe. I also took my few other enchanting supplies. An extra etching rod, clamps for holding the objects steady, pens, parchment, and that sort of thing. After a bit of consideration, I changed my mind about the etching rod and left that one behind. Any enchanted item had a risk of being modified. While I didn't see any new runes on the rod, the stick that Derek had given me proved that there were ways of hiding enchantments. After that, I locked my room and headed back to Derek's place. I dropped my stuff off there. Someone broke into my dorm, I explained to the others. Bring me with you if you plan to go back to your own rooms. I'll check for enchantments. Derek looked concerned when he heard the news. I'll double-check the security of the mansion. We're well protected here, but I'll take some extra precautions. I was glad for that. I also spent a bit of time checking the mansion for anything suspicious myself. Each room had a standardized set of runes etched into a wall. In a couple specific places, like Derek's room, there were redundancies for extra protection. That's a citrine-level anti-divination rune. A pretty standard precaution, and a powerful one. I think that's a teleportation rune linked to a shielding rune. That would work a little differently from the anti-teleportation runes I use. Since it doesn't block teleportation from being used inside the manor. It just prevents teleportation spells that originate from outside the house from getting in. That makes a lot of sense, since it still allows people inside to escape via teleportation, but it prevents attackers from being able to teleport straight in. I'll write this combination down. Might need to use it myself eventually. This last one is a reinforcement rune for protecting the walls. Kind of easy to forget these are here since Karis and Derek always end up wrecking the rooftop anyway. After that, there were sets of capacity and recharge runes for each of the mana types. Nothing out of the ordinary. All of those enchantments seemed like reasonable precautions, and I didn't find any rooms that had any extra runes that were out of place. Considering how powerful some of those enchantments were, as well as the sheer number of them, Derek must have spent a fortune on defending his home. I'd sleep a little easier knowing that. Who could have broken into my room? The most likely option was someone connected to Ordin and the Whispers. If that was the case, I didn't think I'd be able to track them. I looked up the set of runes I'd found on the floor and formulated a plan. I couldn't act on it immediately, but I had some ideas. I considered hiring a more powerful enchanter or diviner to look into it on my behalf, but I couldn't afford it. I also thought about reporting the incident to the school, but after what had happened to Orden, I didn't really trust the Academy's administrators. Moreover, I didn't really want to bring anyone else into this whole mess if I could avoid it. For the moment, I just have to watch my back while I looked into other things. The next major item on my agenda was to visit Professor Vellum. She was the closest thing I had to an enchanting mentor, as eccentric as she was, and I needed her advice. But first, it was finally time to go back to class. Chapter 3. Mismatch. If I'd wanted to take it slowly, I probably could have skipped a few days of class without a tremendous risk to my grades. My next class on the schedule happened to be one of Lord Teft's, dueling class. That would have made it even easier to skip since he knew about my situation. But I wasn't interested in a vacation. I'd seen how far behind I was in terms of raw power in the tower, and I needed all the fighting practice I could get. More importantly, I needed every point I could earn. Not only was I still worried about graduating, I also knew that with the growing chaos in my life, it was likely that my second year would be even harder. The points I earned this year impacted my placement for the second year, if I graduated. That meant that getting as high of a score as physically possible was a priority, because I wanted to have a safety net for the second year. Finishing my second year with a high score was also a must, because I wanted to be able to choose to be assigned to be a climber. The knowledge that Tristan was alive hadn't changed that in the slightest. If he'd already been stuck in the spire for 5 years, clearly there was something keeping him from leaving. Being assigned to a climber role would give me the best chance of figuring that out and getting him home. I'd obviously get him out sooner if I could, but I couldn't count on that. Finally, I had one more reason to go to the class. I wanted to see how my new attunement worked in action. That wasn't going to be ideal, however, since today's dueling class was dedicated to something we rarely seem to discuss. Dueling. We were actually fighting duels. That still wasn't exactly my area of strength, but I did have a much better chance than when I'd first started the school year. Knowing Teft, there'd be some kind of spin on it, but I didn't know exactly what that was going to be when I walked in. Teft leaned up against the lectern, addressing the class.
While most classes will have final exams in the last 2 weeks of the school year, I've found that I get far better results when my students aren't prepared. And thus, today, we begin the first stage of your final exams.
He waved a hand.
Follow me to the dueling arena, class.
I winced. I wasn't ready for a final exam. But that wasn't my primary concern. Sarah was sitting right next to me. She still couldn't use her attunement. But Teft knew that, didn't he? Would he pair her with someone who wasn't a good duelist, or maybe let her skip the test until she recovered? We exchanged doubtful looks as we stood and followed Teft out of our usual open-air lecture area toward... I wasn't really sure. I thought that classroom was considered the dueling arena, although we'd used different rooms for a few training exercises. I should have known better than to expect a normal dueling arena out of Teft. True, the location he led us toward was a sports arena, one used for Vaban, a popular ball game designed for Attuned. The Vaban court itself, however, had been modified for our activity. The arena floor was gray stone, about 100 feet across and roughly 50 feet wide. Normally, the only marks would be dividing lines every 10 feet to mark increments of distance. Today, the court had been covered in square tiles etched with runes. With a snap of Teft's fingers, the squares began to glow a variety of colors. In specific, red, orange, yellow, and green. I noted that a handful of squares remained unchanged as well. I did not like where this was going. I hated colored tile puzzles. From the groans of the students around me, I could tell that many of the other students agreed. Teft gestured to the battlefield.
Today you will be fighting in team matches on the field below. Rather than traditional dueling, this challenge combines the difficulties of dueling with the risks of a standard format for tower chambers. Tiles with different magical effects.
He glanced around at the class.
For the moment, divide yourself into teams of four.
I breathed a sigh of relief at that, since I already had three people with me.
Where's Roland?
Patrick asked, glancing around. I frowned, both because adding Roland into the formula would disrupt my perfect team of four, and because I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen him. Where was Roland? He wasn't in class, certainly.
Don't see him,
I replied. But we've got a solid team of four right here. I was talking about Patrick, Marissa, and Sarah, of course.
Might not be so wise, my Lord Corrin. I'm still not in the best of fighting shape, nor is Sarah. Maybe we could get a pass, given that we're still recovering.
It was savvy of Marissa to phrase it that way, since it didn't put the entire burden on Sarah. And in fairness, Marissa was probably still recovering from that burst of extra mana that Katashi had given her. It had only been a few days since then, even if it felt like weeks.
Wait, did Katashi use the Arbiter Attunement to give her that power increase? Was his ability the same one that I have?
It seemed functionally similar, even if Katashi had the extra flashiness of drawing on the extra line of the rune for her next attunement level. He'd given her more than twice her previous maximum in mana, too, which I wasn't supposed to do. But maybe that was the reason it was taking her so long to recover. It was possible Katashi had risked her health by giving her so much power at once, and it was also possible that he knew better than the researcher did exactly how much power was safe to transfer at once. Maybe there were other more complex factors in play. For example, the Guardian Attunement was defensive in nature, and that might have allowed Marissa to tolerate more mana safely. I didn't know, but it seemed like it was worth researching eventually, or just asking Katashi about it if I saw him and didn't have anything more important to discuss.
I'll go ask Taft if we can get you two excused from this, or maybe all four of us,
Patrick offered, jarring me out of my introspection. I nodded as Patrick headed in Taft's direction. I turned to Sarah in the meantime. Have you been feeling any better? Sarah shrugged. I went to the divinatory to do some research earlier. I found a few options we can investigate. I'll tell you more after class. She gave me the weakest smile I'd ever seen, then turned her head away. Patrick came back with Taft a few moments later. Taft walked straight over to Sarah.
Ms. Cadence, I was aware that you were injured in the tower, but not the degree of severity. That said, there will be many times in life when you are forced to fight at a disadvantage.
He folded his arms.
Given your circumstances, it is within reason for you to skip this week's test to recover. If you choose to do so, I will give you a below-average but passing grade for the exam. Due to the structure, it would not be possible to take the test at a later time. Would you like to take that option? This is not a trick question.
Sarah glanced to the rest of us. Her lips twisted into a frown. Patrick put a hand on her shoulder.
We can handle this as a team, Sarah. The four of us can handle whatever Teft throws at us.
Sarah turned her head to Patrick, her eyes meeting his. Then she nodded, and with new resolve, she turned back to Teft and curtly shook her head.
Good,
Teft nodded in return, then turned his head to Patrick.
And because you've chosen to influence her, Master Wayland, you can be on her team. Your opponents,
my heart sank as he gestured,
will be Master Cadence and Ms. Callahan.
I knew there would be a twist to this. I just hadn't expected... Rash!
Your team will be up second.
Taft turned his back to us and walked away to split up the other teams.
Well, I glanced from side to side. This is awkward.
Patrick was full of resolve.
Sorry, Sarah. Didn't think he'd do that, but this is better in some ways. Go easy on us, Mara?
Sarah stepped in between the two of them, put her hands up in a warning gesture, and shook her head vehemently. I turned to Patrick.
Yeah, if you think Sarah wants us to go easy, you haven't been paying enough attention. She'll murder me if she realizes I'm going easy on her.
Sarah raised a finger and made a throat-slitting gesture, her expression serious. I said that, but the key part was if she realizes. It was working, so I decided to add to the effect. And in truth, I'm not sure you'll need it. Sarah is vastly better with things like tile puzzles than I am. Don't know about you, Mara.
I'm not good at them. Much better at punching things.
Seems fair.
Not sure how much that'll help.
Patrick sounded dejected. We don't even know what they do yet. I think that's part of the point. I jerked a thumb at Taft. He'll probably give us some basic rules in a few minutes, after he's done splitting up the other teams. Then we'll have to figure out how the tiles work once we're in there. We chatted for a couple more minutes. Taft did another round of walking to every group, checking on the status of our shield sigils, then headed back to the front of the class to address everyone.
You will not always be able to choose who your allies and who your enemies are. For today's test, you face a scenario every soldier dreads. A battle against some of your closest allies. Or in the case of some of you, he scanned the crowd, merely the people you thought would make the most efficient team. In either case, you very likely know something of the abilities of your opponents, and vice versa. This will be a test of both your combat abilities and your knowledge of how to counter the tactics of your rivals.
I caught Sarah's eyes. The tip of her mouth curled up just slightly. She'd always dominated me at games of strategy. Valor, crowns, it didn't matter which.
This test, Taft waved at the arena, will be a simple one, but not an easy one. Each colored square has a different effect. Some are beneficial, some are detrimental. Both the layout and the effects of each square vary between matches, and thus, fighting later will not offer you an information advantage.
I heard a few groans at that, but I didn't agree with Teft's assessment. Not entirely. If there was a discrete list of possible effects, we could learn those from early matches and have an idea of what some of the squares might be, even if the specifics were different. I also suspected Taft knew that, and that he was expecting a few of us to pick up on it.
A few rules, of course. First, you will be given an attachment called a sigil monitor to put over your shield sigil before the match starts. When your shield sigil is depleted, the monitor will immediately detect this and teleport you out of the arena to the mender unit.
He pointed to a nearby door on the side of the arena.
When you're teleported out, you're done. The menders will see to any injuries you sustained in the fight. Then you can return to the stands to watch the remainder of the battle. You may not return to the fight, even if you can recharge your sigil.
Well, that's one idea down right away. Was Teft looking straight at me when he said that? Probably just my imagination.
Second, the match has a time limit of 10 minutes. If neither team has eliminated the other in 10 minutes, it will be considered a draw. Since eliminating opponents is the primary way to earn points for the exam, a draw will not be advantageous to you. While you may feel obligated to allow a draw if you are fighting against your friends, I assure you that this will not be the way to earn the highest amount of points.
But it's not expressly disallowed. Interesting.
Sarah shook her head at me as soon as I looked back at her.
Fine, fine. Taft continued.
You may not leave the arena during the match to maneuver. If you leave the arena, you will lose immediately.
He glanced at Kira Dyson's team, one of the few teams I considered almost as likely as my own to try to find a loophole in the rules. Kira was one of the few people with the shadow attunement in the class, and while she wasn't as good of a straight fighter as someone like Marissa, she was one of the most proficient at finding and exploiting weaknesses in her opponents. I liked her style.
And you also may not interfere in matches other than your own.
He glanced at Patrick when he said that. Apparently he hadn't forgiven us for when Patrick jumped in on my duel against him on the first day of class. I brought a hand to my mouth to unsuccessfully attempt to stifle a laugh.
Finally, you will only be fighting with dueling canes. Other magical items will be permitted, but for safety reasons, I will not be permitting other enchanted weapons.
Another advantage gone. It was a sensible rule, however. Selyse, Leanne, and similar weapons could cause a lot of damage in a test like this.
I will be watching your performance carefully. Today's match will determine which of you are prepared for the second year of this class.
That was an intimidating implication. Was he going to be failing some of us outright? That was not an acceptable outcome. From the looks on the faces of my friends, I could tell they felt the same way.
Teams 1 and 2, come with me.
Team 1 was Kira's team, consisting of her and an elementalist named Lariah Marshall. Team 2 was Rupert Kent, another elementalist, and a constant subject of Marissa's ire, and Desmond Viers, a shaper. I could see why they'd assembled their team of 4 the way they had. 2 elementalists and a shaper would have given them tremendous long-range firepower, and Kira could have handled virtually anything else. I would have given them good odds against our own team, at least in our current state. If Sarah had her summoner abilities... I shook my head. Hypothetical matches didn't matter. I had a real one to watch. Just 1, presumably. We were teams 3 and 4. We headed to the stadium seats, getting as close as possible to get a good look at the action. Teft led the 2 teams to the steps into the arena, where he knelt down to open a box. He retrieved 4 discs from within, the sigil monitors. It was hard to see at a distance, but they had some kind of prongs on them to attach to the shield sigils. Could I disable mine to stay in the fight longer? Probably, but it's not worth the risk. The chance for being hurt is too significant, and it might even get me disqualified. Fortunately, my Phoenix Sigil's barrier is the outside layer. It'll take damage before the normal shield sigil does. And I'm a Carnelian now. My shroud will mostly be inside the barrier, so it won't do too much to help my shield last longer, but it will definitely help prevent injuries from slowing me down. That was all good, but our opponents had Phoenix Sigils too. I'd made them myself. I didn't regret it for a moment. I couldn't hear what Teft was telling the other students at this distance, but they headed to opposite sides of the arena. The tiles were just large enough for a single person to stand on them comfortably, and there were a lot of them. I also wanted to know why some of the squares had remained white, their normal color. If the other squares represented the advanced stages of an attunement, were these white squares supposed to be quartz? And if that was the case, did that mean they had no effect? It seemed so, since the students were stepping on the white squares on their way to the opposite sides of the arena, and there were 2 white squares for each team on the far sides. There seemed to be no traps on those initial squares, but I couldn't be confident that all white squares were the same. Teft often liked to subvert expectations.
Bow to your opponents.
The teams bowed respectfully.
Begin!
A dome-shaped barrier flickered into life around the arena as soon as Teft spoke. The combatants surged into motion. Kira whispered a word, then vanished in a torrent of swirling shadows. Instinctively, I activated my attunement to see where she'd gone, and the answer was nowhere. She was still standing in the center of the shadow cloud, reaching out with her hands. The shadows began to spread. Rupert and Lariah turned toward each other, but Lariah was a hair faster. She hurled a bolt of lightning at him. It got within inches before a glowing shield appeared in front of Rupert and deflected the blast. That was a shaper spell, but I hadn't seen Desmond move. There was a good reason for that, and it wasn't because he was too fast to perceive like Karras. He'd stuck his hands in his jacket pockets, so his opponents couldn't predict his spells based on his gestures. Simple, but effective. A hail of glowing swords appeared in the air above Lariah, descending in a glimmering flash. She dodged to the side, but that meant jumping onto a colored square. A bolt of light erupted when she landed on it, and I saw cracks flicker across her shield. The glowing sword storm struck the tiles where she'd been standing a moment before, sinking into the stone several inches before vanishing. The tiles themselves aren't shielded, I realized. I might be able to work with that. Rupert was still gathering energy in his hands. A swirling ball began to manifest, glimmering with heat while he whispered. His elementalist mark was on his left hand, so he didn't strictly need to use incantations, but it looked like he'd learned to use his lungs to augment his spells further. From the intensity of the glow, I'd say it was paying off. The globe seemed to solidify over the following seconds. Lariya hurled another blast of lightning, this time at Desmond, but another phantasmal shield appeared in the way. This time, the lightning shifted in mid-air to arc around the shield, blasting Desmond back a step and leaving a crack in his barrier. He landed on a green square. Vines burst from the ground beneath him, wrapping around his legs in a moment. His expression was more perplexed than furious. Near me, Patrick whistled appreciatively. Controlling lightning mid-flight like that was impressive. So, however, was the ball of flame that was gradually solidifying in Rupert's hands. Kira's shadows were still spreading. They now encompassed a half-dozen squares, almost reaching where Lariya was standing. Assuming she could see within her own shadows, it seemed like a valid strategy. Her opponents wouldn't know where to attack. Desmond ducked down, forming a phantasmal blade to cut away at the vines that were binding him, while Lariya hurled another lightning blast. Rupert took this hit head-on, but he managed to retain his focus on the spell he was gathering. And without any further delay, he hurled the sphere in Lariya's direction. Kira's shadows shot out and covered Lariya's square, then seemed to thicken as the fireball approached. The flames diminished as they entered the enclosure of shade, and not just visually. With my attunement active, I could see the intensity decrease as it crossed inside. An unexpected effect. I hadn't known that shadow magic could diminish the power of other spells. But it wasn't enough. The fireball detonated with tremendous force, burning away a section of shadow and crashing into Lariya. The impact hurled her backward, shattering her barrier. Then she vanished. It wasn't one of Kira's tricks this time. Lariya's barrier was gone, and she'd been eliminated from the match. Kira dropped to the ground when the fireball detonated, and it left her mostly unscathed. Her shadows began to spread again immediately afterward, but it didn't seem like a sustainable tactic. Desmond was almost free of his vines, and Rupert was already preparing another ball of fire. I was expecting Kira to do something sneaky, maybe create a bunch of illusions or manipulate the shadows into attacking from a direction opposite from her own location. Instead, she braced herself. Took a breath, and jumped. The remaining shadows jerked inward, pulling as if connected by strings, and condensed until they were pressed against her skin. Kira's features vanished as the shadows stretched across her entire body, covering her like paint. I'd seen that kind of spell before, though. It was more than a cosmetic change. The shadows would enhance her physical abilities further and protect her like a suit of armor. The leap didn't take her far, but it did draw her opponent's attention upward. That meant that her opponents didn't see that she'd left something behind when she jumped. A tiny metal rod. She landed on another white square just a few feet away from where she'd started and began to slowly advance. Nothing happened, seemingly confirming that the white squares were safe. Desmond was free now, and he conjured another hail of glittering blades in the air above Kira. They descended, jamming into the writhing shadows around her, and vanished without a trace. The shadows seemed to diminish for a moment after the attack, but Kira exhaled a breath, and they solidified again. Kira advanced, hopping from white square to white square. Rupert turned to his partner, still focusing on conjuring a ball of flame, and yelled, "Slow her down!" Desmond gave a nod and a reply, then closed his eyes and focused. A glowing wall appeared in Kira's path. She punched it. The wall rippled as umbral mana met with gray, tearing a fist-shaped hole. Seeming satisfied, she struck the wall again and again, widening it until there was almost enough room to jump through. The wall vanished, just in time for Rupert's fireball to pass through where it had been a moment before. It hit Kira straight in the chest. The shadows rippled on contact, sizzling and burning away as the fireball drilled through. Kira reached into a pouch at her side, twitching her hand just as Rupert waved his. The fireball exploded at Rupert's command, but Kira had already vanished. She was right back where she'd started, standing near the metallic rod on the white square. I hadn't heard the chime, but I understood what she'd done. She had a jump bell in her bag. And now, with Rupert's fireball detonated harmlessly, she charged. The lingering shadows around her must have augmented her physical abilities. She was too fast to be running, and then jumping, to clear a section without white tiles, based on muscle alone. I knew shadows had access to enhancement mana as their secondary type, but I hadn't seen it in action before. As she ran, more shadows began to collect around her. Rupert tried to start to gather another fireball, but he was panting with exhaustion, and his forehead was dripping with sweat. And Kira was too fast. Desmond conjured another wave of weapons, but Kira avoided them entirely this time, dodging and weaving through the flurry of glowing blades. Then, she was nearly on top of Rupert, hurling a knife from her belt. It hit his barrier and made a crack just before she landed in front of him, widening that crack with a solid punch. Rupert stumbled backward, landing on an orange square. The blast of energy that surged upward enveloped him, shattering the last of his barrier. Then there were two left on the field. Desmond gestured upward, and glowing wires rose from the square below Kira, similar to the vines that had enveloped him earlier. She jumped over them, but Desmond gestured again, and a glowing shield appeared and flew forward, slamming into Kira's midsection. The force knocked her back, forcing her to land on a yellow square. A warm glow emanated upward, and as I watched, it began to slowly repair some of the damage to Kira's shield. She grinned, stretched, and made a come-hither gesture to her opponent. Desmond waved a hand again.
"Finally, you're visible and standing still."
A glowing metal box appeared around Kira's entire square. I blinked. The box shook a moment later, no doubt due to Kira's attempts to break it from the inside. She couldn't use the jump bell again so soon without recharging it. Desmond shook his head, then made another gesture. Another box appeared around the first box, then another, and another. Then he closed his fist, and the boxes began to collapse inward, as if crushed by an invisible hand. I could hear the sounds of vibrations from inside the box for a few more seconds before Teft stood up.
"That's enough,"
he clapped his hands. The light from the squares vanished, as did the boxes. Kira was still there, breathless, huddled into a ball on the ground. It must have been the only place she could find the space to breathe.
"Master Desmond wins by incapacitation. You may both exit the arena and rest."
And that, I considered, is why I should never fight a Shaper in a duel. My own match was, unfortunately, only a few minutes later. On the plus side, I'd figured out a few little things from that first one. On the minus side, it was safe to assume that Sarah had noticed the same things, and she was probably already a step ahead of me on formulating a strategy. We made our way to the arena, clipped on the sigil monitors, and headed to our sides of the ring. We only had moments to prepare before the match started. I saw Sarah on the other side of the arena bending down and pointing at the tile beneath her, making a sweeping gesture with her hands, and Patrick, nodding in assent, then whispered something I couldn't hear. Then Sarah turned toward us, pointing her dueling cane at me and smirking as she made a mock salute. She couldn't cast spells, but she could still use a dueling cane with deadly efficiency. I turned to Marissa and leaned close to whisper to her.
"I need you to cover me for a minute. I'm going to try to do something with the squares."
"Can't be making promises, but I'll do what I can. Not at my best right now. You sure we shouldn't just charge?"
I nodded.
"We'd win that fight if we could get close. But Sarah will be ready for that. Not sure what they're doing, but they're up to something."
"Bow to your opponents."
We bowed.
"Begin."
We had no more time to plan. I ducked down to look at the nearest tile, an orange one. Marissa apparently took my instructions to mean literally stand in the same square as me, which didn't give us a lot of space, but it did allow her to deflect the first couple of shots from Sarah and Patrick's opening barrage. And barrage was definitely the right word for what they were doing. They were firing fast, and Marissa, still too sick to move as quickly as usual. The distance was giving her time to batter blasts out of the air with her fists and the occasional kick, but she was struggling with it. I had to help. I looked at the tile, and by the goddess, it was complicated. There were 7 sets of runes on it. Not 7 runes, 7 sets. At a glance, I could tell that five of them corresponded to different functions, presumably for white, red, orange, yellow, and green. They each had a different function rune, as well as mana storage and regeneration runes. The sixth was the most important part, the ones that controlled which set of functions currently in use. I wasn't able to identify all of these, but I guessed one of them tied the tile into some kind of central organization system, and at least one of them was a rune that responded to voice commands, presumably Teft's. The eighth set involved a trigger rune for pressure, very similar to the one used for activating a return bell. It had another rune adjacent to it that I didn't recognize, but that gave me something to work with. I realized that not only was this whole situation absurdly complex, but that the floor of this arena was probably worth more than everything I owned by multiple orders of magnitude. Even if the enchantments were weak, and they almost certainly were, this was a crazy investment for just a couple tests. Maybe they get some of the enchanting classes to build things like this as class projects? Wouldn't take long if they've got hundreds of students. A blast that just missed my head brought me back to focusing on my work. Fight now, research later. I turned on my attunement, observing the paths of mana flowing in the runes in front of me. As I suspected, only one of the five initial sections of runes was currently active. I couldn't tell exactly what it did, but it had something to do with earth magic. I grimaced, thinking about how much easier this would be if I could read all the runes. Behind me, Marissa took a hit and staggered, nearly knocking me off my tile. She managed to steady herself quickly, though, and I braced my hands on the ground to prevent myself from falling. I had to work fast. I looked at the function tiles as a set. First one is earth-related, second one recharges shields. Some kind of energy blast from this one? Maybe that one was orange last time. Not sure about this one. It uses enhancement mana, though, so it may be good. Last one. Disables all functions, maybe? That was good enough information for now. I pulled my engraving rod out of my bag. We weren't allowed to have magic weapons, but Teft hadn't said anything about tools. I started carving a new rune. The tile already had a system for changing functions. I just needed to add a new way of doing that. One I could control. It was a decent idea up until the point when an energy blast knocked the engraving rod out of my hand, sending it flying three tiles away. I looked up. Patrick and Sarah were advancing, firing while they walked. Marissa was struggling even harder now, taking a hit to her left leg while I watched. As Patrick and Sarah got closer, it was getting easier and easier for them to fire accurately.
Corin, little help here?
Marissa had switched into a sideways stance that exposed less of her own body to attacks, but that meant that more of me was exposed. Almost got it. That was almost true. I glanced at one more tile, a green one right next to me, and identified that rune as the beam blast one. I stood up, thinking, while I pulled the dueling cane off my belt and finally began to return fire. Patrick and Sarah scattered as I fired, stepping on colored squares. Nothing happened. I blinked. Our opponents advanced. I didn't have any idea how they were managing that, nor did I have time to think about it. Patrick hurled a bolt of lightning that split into three. Marissa managed to jump and smash one of the branches of the bolt, which was pretty impressive, but the other two smashed into me and left deep cracks in the barrier. I felt the mana in my Phoenix sigils sink to just over half. Panic got my mind working. If I was right that earth magic meant vines, that meant orange and green had been directly swapped. I dodged Sarah's next attack directly onto a red tile. Slowly, gray mana began to trickle upward and recharge my shield. Now we're talking. I aimed at Sarah and fired three shots in rapid succession. She dodged easily, still ignoring the color of the squares below her entirely. I leaned closer to Marissa, who was still standing on our starting tile.
Red is helpful, so you can dodge to those. Think green is the energy blast one. Don't get hit by that.
I knew yellow was probably beneficial too, but red seemed like a better bet until I could identify the function.
Got it!
She nodded, immediately scanning the ground for red squares. Patrick tried to take advantage of her distraction to hit her with a lightning blast,
but she just swatted it out of the air without even looking. Marissa hopped to a red tile, and I saw the same kind of energy wash over her. We were both recharging now, which was good. The problem was that it was slow, and we weren't doing any damage in return. When I turned to fire at Patrick, he was more sluggish in his response than Sarah, but he still managed to blast my own attack out of the air with one of his. I hopped to another red square to dodge Patrick's return fire, but Sarah anticipated my movement and hit me with a shot from her cane as soon as I landed. Their teamwork was better than ours, too. They'd been practicing together for months at this school alone, and known each other for years before that. We need to even the odds. But I was taking too long, so Marissa was the one who acted. She ducked a pair of shots, plunging a fist into the ground. A fist that was, as it turned out, surrounded by a cutting aura like I'd seen her demonstrate for Karis. In a moment, I understood. I jumped closer to Marissa, deflecting two shots from Patrick and returning an ineffective barrage of my own. It only took a few more moments for Marissa to cut the green square out of the floor, then pull it up by the edges. It fired a harmless blast into the air. Sarah must have seen what she was doing, too. I couldn't parry her attacks fast enough, but I stepped into the way and took two hits. This was worth the cost. Marissa flipped the square to face Patrick and shook it. A blast of energy flared out, too fast to dodge. It slammed into Patrick, knocking him back and damaging his shield. The attack carried him back several meters, but he never triggered any tiles, and I finally saw why. He was floating. Both Sarah and Patrick were. They were only an inch off the ground, so it was almost impossible to tell. As an elementalist, Patrick had access to air and fire mana. He usually mixed them for lightning attacks, but that didn't mean he couldn't use them on their own. Marissa shook the square some more. Nothing happened. Probably needs time to recharge. Let's get to safer squares. Together we fell back. Sarah opened fire directly at the square that Marissa was carrying. She managed to get it out of the way, but the effort knocked her off balance. I stepped in and caught Marissa before she could fall on a more dangerous square. Marissa looked chagrined.
Sorry, not fighting at my best.
You're doing great. Better than I am. Just keep firing that thing as it recharges, and we should wear them down.
Patrick and Sarah were backing off, too, which surprised me. I saw why in a moment. Sarah ducked down with her dueling cane, produced the bladed portion, and began to cut out a square of her own. That's bad. Fortunately, the blade on the dueling cane wasn't meant for cutting stone, even when empowered with mana. It was taking her much longer than Marissa had. I raised my cane and fired at her, but Patrick was right there in front of her a moment later, batting my attacks to the side with practiced ease.
This wasn't working.
Hand me that. I'll use it. You're better at melee range. Close in and smash them before they can finish copying you. Yellow squares are probably safe, but I don't know what they do.
I hooked my cane on my belt. Marissa handed me the square and charged. Patrick settled into a fighting stance. Normally, he wouldn't have had a chance in a physical fight with Marissa, but she was still sick, and Patrick was the kind of friend who paid close attention to everything about the people he cared about, including, it seemed, how to fight us. Marissa was nearly in striking distance when Patrick threw his dueling cane at her. She ducked it, closing in further, and threw a punch at him. She hadn't noticed that in the moment he'd thrown the cane, he'd charged his shroud with lightning. Patrick blocked with his left arm, shuddering at the force of the blow, but the effect on Marissa was far worse. The electrical charge jumped into her, bypassing her barrier entirely because she'd been the one to make physical contact. Her shroud might have absorbed a fraction of it, but from the way she shuddered and staggered backward, I could tell it hadn't done much.
"I'm so sorry about this."
Patrick stepped forward and shoved an open palm into her chest. Marissa convulsed again as the electricity surged through her and she fell to a knee. I stepped to the side to get a better angle and shook the square in Patrick's direction, but nothing happened. Connecting with the mana in the square told me that it was critically low. It did have a mana recharging function built in, but it seemed like it wasn't meant to be triggered several times in rapid succession. Maybe it would have recharged faster if it was still connected with the other squares. I saw some transference runes I didn't recognize.
I couldn't count on it to recharge on its own fast enough to be useful. Fortunately, I didn't have to. I found the right rune and shoved my own mana into it. Marissa tried to stand. Patrick raised a fist before she could, but he never had a chance to swing it. The blast of energy from the tile caught him in the side and tossed him 20 feet out of the way. Sarah raised her own tile, triumphant, just in time for Marissa to smash it in half with a fist. I advanced while Patrick picked himself off the floor. Sarah tossed her shattered pieces of the tile to the side, ducking one of Marissa's swings and picking up her discarded dueling cane from the floor. Marissa was moving a lot slower than usual now, the lightning clearly having taken a toll. That made her slow enough to let Sarah blast a spear into Marissa's chest at point-blank range. Marissa hadn't lost any of her resilience, though. She smacked the dueling cane right out of Sarah's hand right after that, then grabbed her and shoved her at the closest green square. The levitation spell apparently wasn't strong enough to resist the kind of force Marissa could use. The blast erupting from the floor cracked Sarah's shield, but it wasn't enough to take her out of the match. She backed off rapidly, circling to try to flank Marissa alongside a recovering Patrick. I couldn't let that happen. My hand was burning. Recharging the tile had taken a lot out of me, but I recharged it again. I fired at Patrick again. This time he was ready. The blast was too fast for any of us to dodge, save maybe Marissa at full strength. Instead, he snapped his fingers and a wall of lightning appeared in between us. The blast of light crashed into it and deflected to the side, impacting harmlessly on the barrier outside of the arena. He winced and grabbed his left hand with his right. He was starting to feel the cost of all his spells, too. Slowly, I advanced. The burning in my right hand had changed to throbbing, which wasn't a good sign. I was probably too low to safely recharge the square again without causing myself permanent harm. My opponents didn't need to know that, though. I moved closer to Patrick, stepping on red squares as much as possible, feeling my Phoenix sigil recharging just a bit with each step. I kept the square leveled at him, hoping to keep him too worried about it to focus on Marissa. It didn't work. Sarah had managed to reclaim her dueling cane from the floor, and now she was falling back and firing at Marissa from a distance. With Marissa's injuries, she was moving slow enough that Sarah was landing hits almost half the time. Patrick ran for his own abandoned cane. I couldn't run effectively while carrying the tile. It wasn't heavy, it was probably only a few inches thick, but it was large enough to stand on, and that made it cumbersome. I threw it to the side, but I still didn't run. I stepped on a yellow square, planning to duck down and figure out what it did, but I didn't need to. The dueling cane on my belt started to glow as soon as I hit the tile, and I understood. I pulled my cane back off my belt and fired straight at Patrick's cane. The orb that emerged from my weapon was 3 times the normal size, more like one from a war cane, but without the loss of speed. I didn't hit the cane, though. Patrick was just quick enough to get in the way, and he slammed an electrically charged fist into the supercharged sphere. There was a flash of white, and the sphere shot back in my direction. I had not expected that. I threw myself out of the way too fast to pay any attention to where I was landing. My shroud did precious little to absorb the pain of impacting with a stone floor. That wasn't the real problem, though. When I tried to push myself up, I discovered that there were vines wrapped around my chest. Oh, and I'd lost the grip on my cane, and it was a couple feet from my hand. So there was that. Glancing up, I could see that Patrick was in bad shape, but he'd managed to get his cane. He was now running full speed away from Marissa while Sarah was firing orbs at Marissa's back. She was only occasionally connecting now that Marissa was moving, but Marissa wasn't gaining any ground. She was injured, sick, and had to avoid half the squares that the other team didn't. She wouldn't win this on her own. I pushed upward, but the vines below me were too strong. If I wiggled, I could just barely reach the function runes. I didn't have a tool to carve a whole new rune and change the function, but maybe. I concentrated on the energy in the active runes, identifying the earth mana. It wouldn't work to activate the other runes, of course, since they were designed to use other types of mana. But what would happen if I mixed in some of the wrong type of mana? I had a pretty good idea, and I knew it was going to hurt. I shoved transference mana into the rune. The tile beneath me exploded. Fortunately, my chest was far enough off the ground that my shroud actually did its job. Unfortunately, it was still enough concussive force to throw me a good 10 feet into the air, and I landed on an identical tile only a few feet away. This time, I had the presence of mind to roll immediately, and the vines only managed to entrap my leg. I coughed, producing a mixture of blood and phlegm that would have worried me a great deal more if I wasn't still wearing a ring of regeneration. I tried to stagger to my feet, but I barely managed to get to a knee. Marissa blazed by, ducking and slashing through the vines with the aura around her hand.
"That
was all I managed before I collapsed into a coughing heap. That was definitely not a good sign. I wiped myself, pushed myself to my feet, and decided I needed to end this fast. I staggered back to pick up my cane while a visibly exhausted Marissa continued to do her best to pursue Patrick. Patrick was slowing down too, and I knew that if Marissa could catch him, she stood a good chance of winning that fight, even with his electrical aura. I decided to help with that, and I had a better idea of how the tiles worked now. I dodged a quick shot from Sarah, shooting her a dirty look in reply. She gave me a mock bow, stepped back, and fired at Marissa again. I shot Sarah's attack out of the air, then turned to Patrick and Marissa's chase, watching closely before I fired. I hit a tile right in front of his path. Patrick jumped back, anticipating the tile triggering from my attack, which it didn't. I knew it wouldn't. The activation runes didn't work on gray mana intake, but I also knew that Patrick wouldn't know that, and his hop back took him back just far enough for Marissa to close the distance. She hammered him with a haymaker before he had a chance to recover. His electrical aura was still active, but she was ready now. She braced for it, charging her fists with her own aura and slamming them into his chest again and again. Patrick fell backward, managed to duck a punch, and waved his hands outward, blasting Marissa back with a gust of wind. She hit a green square, the column of energy, cracking her shield. That just made her angrier. So, for just one punch, she turned on the bracer I gave her, and she hit Patrick hard. Patrick vanished as his phoenix sigil and shield sigil barriers collapsed in one strike. And then it was two of us against Sarah alone. By the time I turned back to Sarah, she was already running. It's probably what I would have done in her situation, too, thinking that getting some distance and running out the clock would be a good way to force a draw. But Patrick was the one who had been powering the levitation spell. She only managed to make it a couple squares before the spell faded and dropped her. But maybe she'd anticipated that, too, because she landed on a yellow tile, and she still had her cane. She fired at Marissa first, now shooting supercharged orbs empowered by the square. But even exhausted, Marissa had little difficulty defending when it was only against a single opponent. She punched and kicked the spheres out of the air with practiced precision, while I found a flanking position and returned fire on Sarah from a yellow square of my own. Sarah matched me shot for shot, perfectly knocking each attack out of the air. But every second she turned her focus toward me, Marissa inched a little closer. Sarah glanced back and forth, firing lazy attacks at each of us, probing. We both deflected her attacks and advanced. Marissa was only a few squares away when Sarah charged toward me. I raised my cane and fired at her, but Sarah ducked the shot and jumped between squares with surprising speed and ferocity. She only had the same safe spots we did now, but she was still outpacing the injured and exhausted Marissa. I assumed she wanted to isolate us, fight us one at a time. I was almost right. I managed to hit Sarah just once with an empowered shot before she was right in front of me. I expected a close-range fight with dueling canes. I didn't expect her to jump on top of me. I stumbled backward, half because of her weight and half because of my usual aversion to touch, and landed right on a green square. Sarah tried to sweep my feet, and I understood too late that she was trying to pin me on a square that would damage me continuously. Her sweep didn't quite work, though. I grabbed onto her as I toppled backward, and we tumbled onto the square together. The square triggered a second time, engulfing us both in light. Then a third. And then I was somewhere else.
I blinked, finding myself in a sitting position in a medium-sized stone room on a bed. Sarah appeared a moment after me. Patrick, of course, was already inside, sitting on another nearby bed. An older Phoenix Division student had a hand on Patrick's forehead and an irritated expression. Patrick grinned at us.
Oh, did you two manage a double KO?